It's Rosh Chodesh Adar, so Purim is a good thing to talk about. I just noticed the pattern here. Apparently, Rosh Chodesh Adar could impact on yeshiva guys' dress in one of two ways. There are those who could emphasize the Rosh Chodesh part, and those who could emphasize the Adar part. So we seem to have a split here between white shirts and Hawaiian shirts. Okay? Either those who are in the Rosh Chodesh mode or those in the Adar mode. But kind of shockingly, Greg Shapiro and Araita, the Rosh Chodesh mode seems to be more dominant than the Adar mode. It's just you and Zach Goldberg. Okay. Zach, I assume you did it for Adar, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. There you go. Okay, so if we think about the day of Purim and ask what its status is and compare it to other Yomim Tovim, so I think that could lead to an intriguing conversation. On the one hand, we might think of Purim as being lesser than Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot for the simple reason that Yom Tov are Doraita and Purim's Darabanan. Okay, that's one point. On the other hand, Purim might have some more status than, let's say, Hanukkah. What might give Purim more status than Hanukkah? Okay. Stop with Hasidic Joshua at a more basic reason. What? Purim's? Yeah, Purim is in Tanakh. Can I realize being in Tanakh does not make you Doraita? But nonetheless, maybe they would give it a special status. Obviously, Hanukkah is post-Tanakh, and Purim is not. So maybe that would give Purim some status. So beyond its source, beyond the Durbanan and being in the... Come in. Okay, beyond the fact that it's Durbanan being in Tanakh, of course, you could ask, how does the day play out halakhically? For example, I realize we know what we do, but in theory, will there be an Isser Malacha? Is there going to be a work prohibition in Purim? Is it a day of Simcha? Is it a day of joy? And that could play out in two halakhic frameworks, which are in some ways the opposite, but they might be a test case of the same thing. Because you could have a Chag, which then meets with mourning, or a Chag that meets with a wedding. And they'll both raise similar questions. Okay, obviously, when a Chag meets with mourning, what question will I have? Is the Aviloy canceled? Is it suspended? What happens when someone's an Avel, God forbid, and Purim comes? Because just to review for 1 second, what happens when someone's an Avel and a Chag comes?
It's done.
Okay, the Chag doesn't only suspend the Aviloy, the Chag cancels the Aviloy. Okay, if someone's in the middle of Shiva and a Chag comes, the Aviloy is canceled. We'll come back to why later. When someone's in the middle of Shiva and Shabbos comes, what happens? Shabbos does not cancel Aviloy, Shabbos suspends it, right? Instead, they're not sitting at home with a torn shirt on a low chair, right? They're back in shul, and then Saturday night again, they're back in Avilut. Okay, so where would Purim fit into that model? What happens when the Avel encounters Purim? Okay, what's the wedding scenario? What might the case be? Am I allowed to get married? What if someone really loves Purim? Okay, they want to get married on Purim, it's their favorite day of the year. Now, why don't we let people get married on Chagim? Why can't you get married on Sukkot?
Take away from the Simcha.
Very good. This is a famous rule in halacha called Ein Ma'arvin Simcha V'Simcha. Two different sources of joy are not meant to be mixed up. Makes sense, as Jacob says. Every Simcha deserves its own focus. You don't like lose its intensity because there's some other Simcha that I'm thinking about. So I don't get married on Chagim. Wait, would that apply to a day like Purim or a day like Hanukkah? So again, we're trying to figure out the status of these holidays, the Rabbinic Chagim. Right? We have a couple interesting test cases. What's their status in terms of Avilut, and what's their status in terms of a wedding? Okay, everyone good? Any comments or questions thus far? Okay, great. So let's start to see how things play out. So if we go to the Shulchan Aruch in Source 1, okay, he is in Hilchos Purim. Let's see, yeah, John K.
Wait, when you said that Chagim canceled Avilut, does that mean that day that was on the Chag is ended, or the entire
thing? No, the entire thing is ended. Okay, in fact, I'll present like that. Many people find, as mentioned for 1 second, more of a psychological point than a halachic point. Many people find Shiva very helpful, right? A chance to get your act together, express your grief, talk about the deceased, right? Have the whole community come to see you. So I often find that in a case where people don't have that much time, it's kind of frustrating. Meaning, let's say someone passed away 5 days before Yom Tov, then you really feel like you had a Shiva, right? You had 5 days, okay, maybe you didn't have the full seven, but you had a reasonable amount of time to sit Shiva. But when someone is buried, let's say, a day and a half before Yom Tov, right, you're right. Then they end up with a very condensed Shiva. Sometimes it can be psychologically difficult. Okay, Shiva, it's not suspended, it's over. Right? You have the Shiva till Yom Tov kicks in. Yeah, John.
So why do we not hold this when it comes to Brit Milah?
Why don't we hold this when it comes to Brit Milah? Oh, you say, why don't we say Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha in that context? So that's a good question. Yeah, I'm going to ignore it for now, but it is a good question. Yeah.
Fasted in Shiva,
does it affect
that at all?
No. You say, what if a Shiva overlaps with like Asar B'Tevet?
Yes.
Why do you think it should be affected?
Because
Oh, this is a rule of Eim Harvin Avila Bavila. Okay, that's pretty clever. That's great. Jonas Sobel's going to write about some parallel universe where the rule is Eim Harvin Avila Bavila. Okay, that's me. Yeah.
What happens if someone dies on a
Hanukkah? Ah, okay, one thing I should have said. Thank you, Dan Shapiro. When I said that Yom Tov suspends, cancels Avilut, but everyone needs to have at least some Shiva. So that means if someone dies on Yom Tov, and the Shiva will only begin afterward, then Yom Tov does not cancel it. It just delays it. Then they would have the full Shiva. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. John Saino.
If someone dies on Erev in Pesach, like the morning of, then you just have like that sliver of the day?
No, but except for one thing, guys. If someone, what might happen if someone dies in Erev Pesach, in theory?
It won't be buried.
They could, it won't be buried in Erev Pesach. And Avilut only starts, remember last show call, you guys? Yeah. What are the relatives between death and burial? Their own name. Right, Avilut only kicks in after the burial. So unless they were buried on that day itself, the Shiva would start after the Chag. You're right, it could be a very small, short Shiva. Yeah, Jacob Glassman.
Still apply for Chol HaMoed. Does that cancel?
Chol HaMoed, does it cancel? No, it delays. You want to start Shiva until the whole Chag's over. Yeah.
Right, like an extra day of Yom Tov in America versus in Israel?
Yeah. Therefore?
So that extra day take away...
He said maybe on Yom Tov Sheni we should just start Avelos because it's only Yom Tov Sheni.
Yeah.
No, we don't do that. Okay, Yom Tov Sheni is still treated. Yeah.
Like a day like Erev Pesach, let's say, where you could find sources in Pesukim to say that that was in the Great Kodesh.
Yes.
That,
yes.
Then would you?
Oh, who says that idea? In fact, in the context of Avelot, who says it? Jacob Rockwood.
Oh, Rashi.
And the Gra, your favorite Rav.
Yeah. Wait. So what was the? If you're not able to mourn on a day like that?
Yeah, I just mentioned very briefly what Jacob's talking about. Okay, there's a good chiddush people should know about. I told my morning share. Okay, if you look at Shulchan Aruch, he describes Erev Pesach as different than Erev Sukkot. He says that Erev Pesach in the afternoon, there's no mourning practices whatsoever. Okay, because again, obviously as you're getting closer to the Chag, at some point the Avel would stop his or her mourning. He says in Erev Sukkot, there would still be some mourning practices. But in Erev Pesach, from midday and on, be no mourning practice whatsoever. So the question is why? Why should Erev Pesach be any different than Erev Sukkot? There's a famous idea found in several Achronim, which is that Erev Pesach is actually a holiday. Okay, we're here for radical Chiddush. You've heard this before? Ari Portel, you with us here? Okay. Which is what we call Pesach, the seven-day holiday that starts on the 15th of Nisan. But the Torah never calls it that. What does the Torah call it?
Chag
HaMatzot. Could be that in Torah language... Chag HaMatzot is the holiday from the 50th of Nisan for 7 days. What is the Torah called Pesach? The 14th, the day that you bring the Karban, Pesach. So some Achronim suggest that in Tanakh there's actually two separate holidays. There's a holiday called Pesach, which is on the 14th of Nisan, and there's a holiday called Chag HaMatzot, which starts on the 15th. And therefore, if that would be true, it's a very good, interesting Kiddush, Erev Pesach would be totally different than Erev Sukkot. What's Erev Sukkot in our tradition?
Nothing.
It is simply the day before Sukkot. But Erev Pesach is actually a day with halachic status, called Pesach, and therefore that's why Avelut will be suspended in the afternoon of Erev Pesach. Jacob Glassman.
You have siblings who one lives in Israel, one lives outside of Israel. Would their Shivas not align?
Okay, look, guys, there are a lot of good questions we could ask about Avelut. It's a fascinating topic, but most of them are going to distract us now. Aaron Freeman.
In Gabriel's case, where someone dies like right before Tag,
yeah.
So you can't bury them?
Yes.
Would they be in status for the entire Chag and therefore?
Well, don't forget, guys, didn't we say last time that you're not an Onan, your own status is different on Shabbos and Yom Tov itself? Because you're not actively involved in the burial at that point? Okay, so you wouldn't, but you're right, though, there can be a case where someone is Onan for an extended period. Yeah, David Lipschitz, that was your question. David Zwick.
Why do you say that the opinion of David, as far as what we call Erev Pesach, is radical and it's on holiday? Because not only do we see that. I guess we can see some of it in Pesukim and in Torah, but we also have that idea in the beginning of Pesachim that the part of the day is you can't do a lot on it.
Okay, excellent. You know what, David, I used the wrong word. It's yours. The Greek freak is sensitive to good language. I shouldn't have said radical. I should have said innovative. How's that? If you stop the average Jew on the street and say, how many holidays in our tradition? I think they will list, you know, Pesach, Shavuot, Chag HaMatzot, Shavuot, Sukkot, Purim, and Chanukah, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. They will not list this holiday on the 14th of Nisan called Pesach. Okay, so let's go. So maybe it's not radical, maybe it's innovative. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right, yeah, Zach.
If there is a holiday on the 14th of Nisan, then how could the whole firstborn's fasting on that day have started?
Well, first of all, it's a pretty interesting fast day if you think about it, Zach. What's kind of unusual about it? It's a fast day where nobody fasts. So we apparently don't take it that seriously in halakha. Okay? All right, we're good? Okay. Ben Brody, how's it going here? Guys, I have good news. I realized I made a mistake all year. I thought that Jordy Wild was joining the Frisch crowd, but the reality is that Ben Brody is a Detroit guy. Okay, that's the reality. In fact, he's taking it very seriously. You notice he's signed up for the Camp Stone interview. Okay, he's been drinking a lot of Slurpees. Okay, he is planning on working for Ford one day. It's very clear.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so let's go back to let's see what we got here in the Psak and Shulchan Aruch. Okay. So what do we have when Purim and Avelut intersect? Okay, source one. Kol divrei Avelut, Noagim b'chanukah Purim. Interesting, has Rav Yosef Karo Paskin. Apparently Purim is not somehow enough of a status to negate Avelut. He actually says, no, you actually continue Avelut. The Avel keeps sitting on the low chair with the torn shirt, the whole business, even though it's Purim. Okay? Now the Ramah comes. Right, normally an Avel doesn't leave the house, right? We bring Minyan to the house of the Avel. But we want him to hear Mikra Megillah, so the Avel would leave the house for Megillah. But then he goes on to say, but obviously there's an alternative. You know what? Even that's easy. Let's get some other Balkari who's going to read the Megillah and do it in the Avel's house. The Avel does not have to leave the home. Okay, so that is the first Psak. The Yesh Omrim, but now comes the Ramban continues. Ain Avilut Noeg Bapurim. Some say we don't practice Avilut and Purim. Lo Biyadad, Lo Betedvav. Not just Purim and Shushan Purim. The Chain Noegin, and that is the custom. Okay, so we seem to have two customs whether Avilut is practiced on Purim. Vafilu Avilut Yom Yishon Yilchem B'fnei Purim. There is an idea that Avilut on the first day might have a more serious halakhic status than the rest of Shiva. It could be Avilut Yom Yishon's even Doraita. It says, even Avil Yom Rishon, we don't practice on Purim. Avil Dvarim Shibit Sin Anoeg, but things that are not public mourning, but private mourning are continuing. V'afapish Enoeg Avil Bapurim, even though Avil is not practiced. Ole lo l'minyan shivi me'lut k'mo Shabbat. Interesting. So even that opinion that says we don't practice Avil on Purim, is Purim like Yom Tov? No, because it doesn't cancel Avil. What does it simply do? It suspends it, and just suspends public Avil. But it's even one of the Shiva. Right, let's say it's day four. You'd count it as day four. Okay, you wouldn't do any public mourning, but you would count it as a day of Shiva, and then you continue the Shiva after Purim. So again, just to sum up first issue, we have a debate if we do practice Avilut on Purim, but everyone seems to think that Purim does not cancel Avilut. It does not have the same status as Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Of course, the question is why. Michael?
For the Shulchan Aruch, if Avilut still happens, would you hold that you engage in excessive simcha like drinking? And then also the flip side of that question, for a month that says that we don't hold a velut, would he say that we engage in excessive happiness such as like drink on Purim for an Avel?
Okay, that is a very good question. Okay, Michael's a very good question. How far would we take the position that ain't Avel Nog Purim? You know, it's not explicit, you'd imagine that an Avel would have a more subdued Purim Suda than normal. I think you're probably right, but let's just see how things play out here. Okay? Great. Yeah. Jacob.
You said that it doesn't cancel.
I mean, Purim does not function the way Sukkot, Shavuot, and Pesach do.
So, you said that like, they're like suspended
from
the day? Or like you're
still like. No, well, those are the two opinions, right? What does the Shulchan Aruch think in the first line? You do a full Avilut on Purim. Yeah. The whole thing. On the floor, right, with on the little chair. And what did the Ramah say? No, we don't practice Avilut on Purim, but we would practice the Dvarim Shebet Sina, and it would count as the day of the Shiva. But no one thinks that Purim cancels the Shiva.
Maybe because it's like God is such a day of happiness and like insensitive to this, like, disregard. Like,
okay, that's interesting. You're saying it's precise because it's actually greater Simcha as well.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting suggestion, Jacob. We'll see as we go along here. Yes, Ezra.
I know it's the food of the lean, but what about like Rosh Hashanah?
That's a great question. You know, let's go a little out of order for a second. Okay. What? We're going to find out right now. Evan, go to source 7. Okay, very good. Good job, Ezra. Okay, source 7. Who knows what Masechet Moed Katan is about? Chol HaMoed, right? It is the small festival, as it were. But famously, you know, we know that there are tangents in Gemara. Okay, the third Perek Moed Katan is mostly about a different topic. Okay, John Seidel. Third Perek Moed Katan is about Avilut. Okay, seven. There's no Masechet Avilot. If someone's curious about mourning, right, most of the major Gemara are in the third Perek of Moed Katan. So let's see what it has there. In, this is a very, very important Mishnah. Okay, source 7. Hakover in Meito Shlosh Yom Kon Regel. Someone who buries the deceased 3 days before the Chag. What happens? Bat Lahimenu Gzeirat Shiva. When the Chag comes, what does it do? It negates the Shiva. There's that idea. Shmona, what if you bury the deceased 8 days before the Chag? So obviously at that point, you would have a full Shiva. So the Chag still has an impact. What does the Chag do at that point? Well, it stops whatever period of Avilut you're in the middle of. So if you're in the middle of Shiva, it stops Shiva. If you're in the middle of Shloshim, it stops Shloshim. It cancels Shloshim. Okay, great. Mifnei Sha'amru, here's the quote. Shabbat Ola, the Eina Mafseket. Shabbat Ola, it counts, namely, the Shabbat day is one of the seven. The Eina Mafseket, and it doesn't? Doesn't cancel, good. Regolim Mafsikin Vein Olim. In contrast, the Chagim, they cancel and they don't count. So that's what we said already. Shabbat counts and is not, doesn't cancel. The Chagim cancel and don't count. Based on what we've seen so far, it seems, interestingly enough, Purim resembles more. What does Purim seem to resemble based on that? Purim is more Shabbos-like than it's Yom Tov-like. We'll have to figure out why. Okay, where are Charles and Harry today? I wanted to make fun of Charles and Harry. Neither of them's here. Maybe they got a memo or something. Good. Okay, what? He's out of the country. Ah, okay. Then I'm not going to go after him. Okay. So let's keep going in the mission here. Okay. No, because I discovered Charles claims that he's not really. I shouldn't make fun of him for eating out. I should make fun of Harry. But he's not here. I guess he's eating out. Okay. Let's go. Rabbi Lezer Omer. Okay. Mishachara Beit HaMikdash. Once this Churban Habayit, Atzeret Kishabat. Shavuos becomes. Now that's quite intriguing. It's not our topic at all, but it's certainly worthy of thinking about. Wait, why would it be that Shavuos, when there's a Beit HaMikdash, Shavuos is like the Regalim, when there's no Beit HaMikdash, all of a sudden, Shavuos becomes like Shabbos. It's certainly intriguing, but not for us right now. But what about Jacob Ben Ezra's question? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, interesting test cases. Why might Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur be interesting test cases? Because if the clash with Avilut is a function of, what's the clash with Avilut really about? The simcha of the chag doesn't go together with the sadness of Avilut. What could you, of course, ask? Well, what about the mood of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Right? Are they days of simcha? Are they not days of simcha? It's a classic question about understanding the atmosphere. I'm sorry? Okay, there you go. David Lipschitz is convinced they're days of simcha. Okay. What? Okay. Okay, and it's your right that we want everything to be a day of Simcha. Okay, we haven't yet managed to make Tisha B'Av a day of Simcha, but we're trying. Okay, so what does it say in the Mishnah? Ram Gliel Omer, Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippurim, Kirigalim. Oh, there it is. They are like the Chagim. They would also cancel Avilut. The Chacham Omim Lo Kedivizeh, Lok Divizeh, Latzeret Kirigalim, Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippurim, Kishabat. So there's a debate here about your question, Jacob Nezer, right here in the Mishnah Moikad. Are Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur more Shabbat-like, or are they more Chag-like? Okay, and probably there's some intermediate status there which explains this debate. Are they really days of Simcha or not? That's probably what the debate's about. Okay, great. Now, let's figure out for a second where we think Purim should fit in. So, if I ask you where Purim fits in, you have to start by asking, why are Yom Tov and Shabbat different? So I think there's two possible answers. A very technical answer and a much more essential answer. If I asked you guys, why does Yom Tov cancel Shiva and Shabbat not cancel Shiva? What are the two possible ways to go? There's two pretty obvious answers. John Seidel, what do you say? Okay, so one possibility is, Shabbos is a great day. We all love Shabbos. But probably is no mitzvah called Simchat Shabbat. There's a mitzvah of Kavod, there's a mitzvah of Oneg. But Oneg is joy and pleasure. It's not the same as Simcha. One could argue, where do you really feel a conflict between Avilut and a holy day when it's a holy day of Simcha? So Yom Tov might conflict with Avilut in a more profound way than Shabbat conflicts with Avilut. That's why Yom Tov cancels Shiva and Shabbat does not. That's one possibility. David Chayanoff.
The whole purpose of Avilut is to kind of give people a week.
Okay, and therefore?
That whole week, but if you have Shabbos.
Excellent, David Chayanoff. You give a very practical explanation. How could you say Shabbat cancels Shiva? It is very difficult to have a Shiva without a Shabbat in it. So if Shabbat cancels Shiva, you basically have undermined the whole concept of Shiva. But you could say the Chagim cancel Shiva without it being a problem. Most Shivas are not going to encounter a Chag. So those are certainly two good explanations. Give me one second, guys. I'll show you that many inside we can see both explanations, and then we'll apply them to Purim in a second. So then we go to source 9 now. Says Tosfot in Moed Katan. Umetar it's Avgav the Shabbat Ola Reglan Ola. Hova Ein Avilu Klal Mishum Dichtib Ben Simcha Shabbat Mielokdiv Simcha. There it is. So like you said, maybe that's the difference. Yom Tov are days of Simcha. Shabbat's not a day of Simcha. That's why Yom Tov cancels Avilu. Okay, if we go to the Yerushalmi in source 10, Yerushalmi says how regular you aster b'tash mita ve'en olah for Shabbat holy aster b'tash mita lo taleh. Am Rabbi Ba, efshar l'shiva below regel, avol efshar l'shiva below Shabbat. Okay, what's the argument in Yerushalmi? Every shiva is going to have a Shabbat. Not every shiva is going to have a regel, right? The practical argument that David said. So both those arguments are clearly there, and they're both reasonable arguments. One second. Now, if I plug Purim into those two arguments, how should it play out? So what about this, if you go with this Yerushalmi argument, the second argument? Purim should be more like Yom Tov. Okay. If I go with the Simcha argument, what would you say? So in theory, Purim would again be like Yom Tov. Right? But then we're kind of stuck. Wait. So that means Purim should really be canceling Avilut. But it doesn't. Okay. So we have to figure out why that is. If we're going to say that both rationales for differentiating Shabbat and Yom Tov should lead to the conclusion that Purim should be like Yom Tov, right? It's not every Shiva has a Purim, and Purim is a day of Simcha. So what happened? Why doesn't Purim cancel Avilut? Michael?
I was going to say on a practical level, if, let's say someone does right before Chag, and they only have an hour of Shiva, it's kind of desensitive to make them go into the state of Simcha and cancel the Avilus.
Okay.
For the Avilus to be Batla kind of just undermines the whole concept of Judaism.
No, Michael, I'm totally sympathetic to what you're saying, but why would that explain why Purim is not like the Chagim, though? I mean, you're saying, your point is definitely true, but that's an argument that applies equally to Purim and to Sukkot and to Pesach.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're right. Maybe you're not trying to explain the Purim distinction. You're just making a separate point.
Yeah, I'm making a separate
point. Your separate point is a good point, but I'm going to leave it aside for now. Yeah, David?
Could an afternoon between Tosfos and Yerushalmi be whether one of their Galim would cancel the Yiddish Kodesh?
Oh, that's clever. So the truth is, whether one of their Galim would cancel. Oh, that was very clever. I have to think about that. That's very clever, dude. Yeah.
Answer to Michael's question on that. Since it's rabbinical happy, in the Torah it commands us to be happy on the Chagim. So the rabbis can't override that.
Okay. But that's not answering Michael's question. That's answering my question.
No, but why he said that.
No, Michael's just saying it's psychologically extremely. It seems not so sensitive that you only get.
Override, so for Purim, since it's rabbinical.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Excellent. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like a basic question. Like, we're canceling a Shiva on all these holidays because it's like a kind of like some kind of inappropriate to have available. But even without a formal day of available, it's still going to be like a sad day for this person. So why not just have a formal day of available so this person can work, like, you know, deal with the problem?
So I guess there's a difference between feeling sad inside and really going through all the motions of available. It's not the same. I think Jacob's obviously right. Obviously, the person's going to feel some sadness during that time period, even if we tell him he's canceled. But there's a difference b'chozo between actively engaging in it and just having that feeling.
Is it perhaps the people around who are
just... Look, you could say it's part of, like, for the communal atmosphere, you could say that, but, yeah.
Can you say the reason why, the Chagim, Batel, available? Because if the Chag comes, like, even if someone dies, and it's going to be, like, 7 days, 7 days of Pesach, even you said it, the Shiva, pushes it off. It would be like 7 days later on, like Shabbos, in one day. So like it would make no sense to, like, do it all the way after Pesach. So I feel like
although there are cases where that does happen, right? What if the person's relative dies on the first day of the Chag?
But then there's no start Shiva.
Right.
In the case that you already started Shiva.
Okay.
Then you can say
okay. Not bad. I got it. Jacob.
Is all of Shiva? Is the nature of all of Shiva Deoraita? Or is it like at least one?
No. Avilut, the simple Pshat Avilut is Avilut Terachanan. Okay. But there is a Shita that the first day is Deoraita.
Okay.
Remember, we had a reference for the first day might be more serious.
Also, is there a middle position suspended for a day, but don't count it as...
No. All right. So let's try to figure that out. Yeah, Uri.
If it's not explicitly written, like Simcha by Shabbos, then why don't people sit up for Shiva on Shabbos?
Okay, look, you're right. I guess there's still something about Avilut and Shabbos that don't fit fully together, but it's not as direct a clash. You have to see there's still some tension there. Okay? All right, let us go back to source 2 for a second. Okay, we're going to try to figure out... All right, I just want to mention one idea in source 2, and then we'll get to what kind of day Purim really is, and try to explain why Purim does not cancel off Yom. Okay, look at source 2. This is a good source to know about, just what it is, actually. Okay, the Shari Tshuva appears on Shulchan Aruch and Orach Chaim. Okay, but here it's a cute play on words. Because normally if you hear the word Shari Tshuva, what do you think of? The gates of repentance. Right, one of the most famous books on Tshuva is a book by Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rishon, called Shari Tshuva. Okay, that is not what it means here. Okay, what does it mean here? Yeah, the gates of responsa. Right, because in Halacha, people write Shelot v'Tshuvot, and these are often books people do not have access to. So it's very helpful for some other Achron to collect all the Tshuvot. So Shari Tshuva actually means the gates of Tshuvot. On Yoredeya, there's a similar work by a different fellow called the Pitchei Tshuva. Again, there, it's not the opening of repentance, but the opening of responsa. Okay, so let's see what it says in Shari Tshuva. What should we do with two different opinions about Avilut? This is a good rule to know about. Ubirke Yotev Katav Dinakat Kamashkel Bebe Yosef Yoredeya Shalul Tabel. We should say, given a choice, what should we say? Don't mourn. Good rule, come on, guys. Dalacha Kedivrei HaMekel Bavel. Okay, why this such rule is an interesting rule, but what's the rule? Every time there's a Malchok and Avilut, what do we say? We're lenient. Now, I'm just going to toss one thing out there. I have no idea if this is right. But it is interesting, because what is people's general inclination of it? To be as machmir as possible. You almost wonder if Halakha is trying to kind of calm them down. Right? I know it's bad, and you want to express your grief, but you don't always have to search for the most machmir position. So there's actually a rule called Halakha Kedivrei Mekel Bavel. It says, therefore, if you have two opinions about whether to actually engage in mourning, you would not engage in mourning. Okay, great. Let's go back to what kind of day Purim is. Okay, so we have our Purim readers here. Where's Aaron Kurtz? Okay. So what kind of day did they originally describe Purim it's going to be? They're making a Takana, Mordechai and Esther towards the end of the Chag, towards the end of the Megillah, where they say, first, it's going to be a day of Simcha, Mishnah, the Yom Tov. Very exciting. Right, the triple. Simcha, Mishnah, and Yom Tov. Okay, when they actually put it to practice, how does the Megillah describe it? A day of Mishnah, the Simcha, dropping Yom Tov. Not only dropping Yom Tov, what's the other shift there, guys? The sequence is different. So again, you could say, oh, you're reading too much into it, but maybe there's something going on there. Why is it originally a Simcha Mishta or Yom Tov day? And then it becomes a day of Mishta v'Simcha, both dropping Yom Tov and switching the sequence. Okay? Okay, here we go. You just got a haircut? Okay, well, God, you're really flipping out here. Okay. Here we go. Okay, let us go to source 3. What happened in this day? Okay, the Rebbe, Heichi Natan Atiyah B'Purim. How could Rebbe plant things on Purim? V'atani Yosef, Simcha Mishta Yom Tov. What does each phrase indicate? Simcha, Malamet Shasurim B'Hespeid. No eulogies. Mishta, Malamet Shasur B'Tanit. No fasting. V'Yom Tov, Malamet Shasur B'Asiyat Malacha. So that's pretty remarkable. What was the original thought according to this? Maybe let's model this rabbinic holiday on the right to pattern. And if you model on the right the paradigm, what are you going to create? A realistic malacha. So how could Rebbe plant things on Purim? Zorei as a malacha. Okay, says the Gemara, Derav Amar, Hesbit V'tanit Kiblu Alayu, Malacha Lo Kiblu Alayu. Dmei Karktiv Simcha U'mishtav V'yom Tov, U'l'besov K'tiv L'asod Dmei Mishtav V'simcha V'ilu Yom Tov Lo K'tiv. So very fastly, how's the Gemara want to take the shift in Megillah Esther? That there was an original Havamina to make it a day of Esther Malacha, but what was the conclusion? Now that's too much. The Rabbanan days don't become days of Yisur Malacha. It'll be a very festive day, but without an Yisur Malacha. So that doesn't deal with the sequence question, but it does deal with the lack of Yom Tov. And maybe at that point already, Purim, already see Purim a little bit of a lesser status, right? It does not generate Yisur Malacha the way that Sukkot or Pesach does. Yeah, David.
Yeah, but it says that it's still a day of Simcha.
Very good. So David says, how does that solve the problem? If it's Simcha that conflicts with Avilut, Purim is still a day of Simcha. Okay, excellent question. Okay, so now let's go to, let's just see the machloket again in Rishonim. And we get to some achronim, I think we'll be able to come up with an answer. Okay, where do we see this machloket Rishonim? So let's go to the Rambam source 4. V'chein ein maspidei tabet b'chanukah Purim, no hespeis o shechashim, aval noegem ben dil d'tivei aveilut. Now that's not an argument, but maybe you could infer it from the Gemara. When the Gemara said it was a day of Mishta v'Simcha, according to the Gemara, what's the implication of Simcha? According to the Gemara, Simcha means no eulogies. Apparently, what did the Rambam say? Oh, it sounds like an inference. Oh, Simcha means no eulogies. Yes. It does not mean
no
avilut. So again, that still doesn't explain why, but maybe that's the source of the idea. Right, the Gemara said simcha means no eulogies. Oh, but there is avilut, and that indeed the Rambam's position, which Rav Yosef Karo quoted at the beginning of our shiur. Okay, now in source 5, oh, if you guys get this, it's going to be very exciting. It's going to be a tough abbreviation coming up. Okay, on the bottom of the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, there's a word called Haggot Maimoniot, which is almost what the Ramah tried to do to Rav Yosef Karo, someone tried to do to the Rambam. What does the Haggot Maimoniot tend to be? The Ashkenazic practice. Someone wrote notes on the bottom of Mishnah Torah. But notice the big difference here. When the Ramah wrote his notes, what happened? Yeah. It got integrated into the Shulchan Aruch. But when the Rambam, when someone wrote Ashkenazic notes, what happened? It didn't really get integrated. In fact, Chaim Soloveitchik has an article, he has a great line. He says, I don't think anyone's going to understand it, but I'm going to quote it anyway. He says, trying to Ashkenaz the Mishnah Torah is like trying to Russify Huckleberry Finn or Americanize the Brothers Karamazov. It's just not going to work. Okay, but I'm not going to explain it, but go look it up. Okay, so let's see what it says now in the Haggot Maimoniot. Okay, so the Haggot Maimoniot says, V'chein Sefer Trumot, V'kach Kat Rabbeinu Gershon. Oh, very good. Oh, John Seidel. Okay, what a move. Guys, you know, it's interesting that different rabbis had different nicknames, but I'm not sure why Rabbeinu Gershon got a nickname that nobody else ever got. I don't know how he merited it. Whenever people heard Rabbeinu Gershon, what do they say? Rabbeinu Gershon? Ma'or HaGola, the light of the exile. I'm not sure how he got that title, but I'm pretty sure he's the only rabbi who ever got that title. Beit Gershom Ma'or HaGola. So if it's Mem Hey after Beit Gershom, right, that's the abbreviation. John Seidel, how'd you know that?
I'm going to Florida.
Okay.
He noticed, and he said the reason why he's going to Erev Ma'or HaGola was because of the kind of no-blinkman.
Okay.
Went against the Christians who's saying, by saying that, like, Yahweh would never be the same wife. And, like, nothing to Christians, like, God would originally married us,
and
stay married us, and
then
go.
What's the source of that idea?
I don't know.
I never thought of the polygamy prohibition as like some anti Christian polemic. Alright, we'll have to look into that. Is that what you're going to say, Jake? Okay.
Hey,
he could be more. Alright, okay. Fine, let's keep going. Okay, so what does Rebbeinu Gershom say about Tshuva? Shalom, manucham, yam, shayn, avet, noigben, el, shalad, regolim, shalom, yom, kippurim, of rashchodesh, chanukah, perm, lo, tanan. What's another inference, guys? Well, that Mishnah boy Cotton, what day did not come up in the Mishnah? And? In the Mishnah boy Cotton, what else didn't come up? Chanukah, Rosh Chodesh, and? Purim. Purim didn't come up. Once again, maybe suggesting that Purim does not cancel Avilut. So again, we still don't have a Svara. We're looking for a Svara. We might have two Talmudic proofs again that Purim does not cancel Avilut. Okay, what might be the two Talmudic proofs? Number one, the Gemara Megillah said, what's the implication of Simcha? No Hesped. It didn't mention Avilut. When the Mishnah and Moed Katan list days that cancel Avilut, Purim is nowhere to be found. Okay? So that, again, we still don't know why, though. However, we do have the other position. Let us go to the Rush in Moed Katan, Source 6. Says the Rush, V'hechad d'shach l'yishiv m'kami Purah, v'yirah m'purim b'kos Shiva, when Purim is in the middle of Avilut, but la'imenu g'zeirat Shiva. Oh, actually, what does he claim? What should Purim do? It should cancel. Meet the Regalim. Finally, someone says like the Regalim. Why? Regalim avsikin menol in my tama the simcha k'tibu v'samach b'chagecha Purim nami simcha k'tibe v'asatam yemei mishteh v'simcha v'davka Purim of Chanukah lo mifsaka. So the Rosh finally takes another position, which we've been arguing logically the whole time. If it's the simcha quality of the chagim that cancels Avilut, and Purim is described as yemei mishteh v'simcha, surely Purim should cancel Avilut. Okay, now we still have to figure out why our tradition does not agree with this Rush. Yeah.
But the pasuk that the Rush is using, Mishav Simcha, and he's like, sort of, I guess, taking the idea of the Samatha Bethagetha, he's just taking the same pasuk that in Megillah, that in Daphne Megillah uses, and has a different understanding of what Simcha is.
You're saying, what about the fact that Gemara Daphne only mentioned Hesped?
Yeah, like
he would have to say Hesped is just an example. Like the same way it would cancel Hesped, it would also cancel Avilut. Okay? Okay? Yeah?
That's actually asked. Why would that be? Like, Hesped is such a minor thing.
Okay, very good. So you guys think that's strong. Maybe that's why our tradition ends up not following the Rush. Maybe there's really good inference.
What's the Svara for anyone who doesn't hold like the Rush for why Rego would cancel Avilut?
No.
Because if the Rush is Svara, Simcha.
The Rush is Svara, yeah.
By default, should be because the Simcha should cancel Avilut. What's the other Svara for why the regular cancels?
No, I think it's the only Svara why regular cancels Avilut. We're still trying to figure out why it doesn't apply to Purim.
So the previous source would also hold it Simcha, and the Rosh would hold it Simcha, and therefore Purim is also Simcha?
Exactly. Yeah, all right.
So just because, just taking a step back, just because Yom Tov is about Simcha, it makes sense, clearly, not to have Avil on it. Why not just suspend until afterwards?
Look, it's a good question. We're not going to address it right now. Yeah.
Also, in the, in the Hegyot Maimonot, at the last line, it says, Yom Gav did bring to Tiv Yom Yishter, Simcha, it says Hatnai, that it's conditional Simcha. So,
oh, Hatani, actually. It's Hatani, yeah, sorry. Sorry about that. It was a good diuk, though. But good diuk, but wrong word. Okay. Let's go to marriage for a couple of seconds, and then we'll try to finally come up with an answer. Okay, Jacob Glassman.
It's interesting that he compares it that the Rosh Hashanah to Yom Tov after this part of the Megillah specifically excludes Yom Tov from the list.
Okay, but that's just, but according to the Gemara Daf Hey, what does that just mean? It doesn't miss from Malacha, but it doesn't mean it doesn't resemble Yom Tov in other ways. All right, here we go, guys. What about marriage? Does he want to get married on Purim? Okay, AJ Listman, you think about getting married on Purim? Okay, good. Okay, let's see, have here in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, what does Shulchan Aruch say in Source 11? Mutar li say Shabba Purim, which actually sounds like the Shulchan Aruch in Source 1. Because what does he say once again? Purim does not clash with Avilut. You could be an Avel. What is there? Purim doesn't clash with the wedding. You could get married. Says the Taz, why is that? Source 12. Mutar li say Shabba Purim. The lo dami lachag. This kind of interesting. There's two different formulations. Some people say, why can't you get married in the Chagim? Because of a rule called Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. Notice the Taz does not cite that. What's the Taz cite? What's the Drasha? The Samakta B'Chagecha V'lo B'Shtecha. Why is that helpful for him? Because if it's not based on some rule called Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha, but based on the Samakta B'Chagecha, what could you argue? It's only a problem for the Chagim, right? Purim doesn't qualify as a Chag, right? You can use other terms for it, but a Chag is one of the Shlosh Regalim. So maybe that's why you can get married on Purim. V'samachta b'chagecha below b'shtecha does not apply to Purim. If you go to the Magen Avraham, notice the Magen Avraham is a different formulation in 13. El ikasha akasha, da kaimon ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. And of course, let's bother the Magen Avraham. If my quote is ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha, that should apply to Purim. I'm going to take questions in 1 second, but let's just set up the problem before we get to the final answer here. Okay, what is our problem at this point, guys? If we go the Avelut Sugya, so it's true the Rosh says that Purim cancels Avelut, but that seems to not be our Psak. We do not say Purim cancels Avelut, but why not? If Avelut's canceled because Regalim are days of Simcha, Purim is a day of Mishteva Simcha, why does it not cancel Avelut? That is one of our questions. Secondly, why is the Shulchan Aruch posting you can get married on Purim? If we're not going to paskin v'simakta b'chagecha, we're going to have a broader principle called ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. Once again, we should say there's a conflict between Purim and marriage. So why is it that Purim doesn't cancel Avilut? And why is it you can allow to get married on Purim? We're going to look at answers in 1 second. Okay, who had a hand up before? That's good? Yeah, Isaac.
Just the way that the Rambam read the Avilut thing, say that it was exclusive, but the Rosh then said it's not exclusive, but it's an example. Can't you say that the Samach Tavitha Getha, that all the Taz people want to say with Obey Shtefa, like it's not necessarily the rule itself, that only Samach Tavitha Getha, but that's just an example?
Right, in theory, don't forget the Taz is trying to explain the Shulchan Aruch.
First of all, you also just say the Magen Avraham, that is in Magen Avraham.
No, the Magen Avraham creates a problem for the Shulchan Aruch. Why is the Shulchan Aruch allowed to get married on Purim?
I don't understand like, how that's really defense.
Look, you could say a chag is an example. You could also say that, no, it's exclusive. I admit your possibility is a possibility. Why does it knock out the other possibility?
It just seems like it's... No, it doesn't knock it out. It just seems
and again,
like
the Taz is trying. He's motivated to explain the Shulchan Aruch, so he's motivated to read it that way. Okay, Andrew Arkin.
I was going to say that the Taz has the problem to use one. According to this far, you would have to be married on Rosh Hashanah.
So that's an interesting question, right? I just said the chag is just the gemur galim. We'd have to define the word chag. Okay, you're right, but that's not for us right now. Yeah.
In Megillah Daf Gimel, it says the Purim note mitzvah chok. How do you set the ritual? It means you can mourn and you can eat your chassis or something.
Yeah.
How does that fit with the Rosh?
How does that fit with the Rosh? I think does he ask that question himself? I feel like that came up somewhere. Well, don't forget, even the Rosh agrees. Wait, how does it fit with the Rosh? Oh. Yeah, that is a good question. Yeah, somebody asked that, but I guess it's not in the sheet. That is a good question. Yeah, Josh.
A little nuance. I don't think any
change, but could you say instead of Yom Tov cancels Avilut, you say that there's something about Yom Tov that fulfills Avilut?
What is that?
And that's what we're trying to figure out. But since not that it cancels, but more like you no longer have Avilut, it's more of a, in a positive sense, it fulfills Avilut.
Okay, look, it's very creative. I think you'd have to like fill in the argument a little bit more. Yeah, but it's quite creative. All right, last two sources, guys. Now here, I hope in preparation, did anybody get the source 14? Actually, I hope the answer is no. Okay, because I think I made a disastrous typo. Okay. Unfortunately, the Amik Bracha and the Mishnah Yavetz are not, as far as I know, in any database that I have access to. Okay, so I typed them both in. And as I was looking at it this morning, I think I made a disastrous typo in the Amik Bracha. Okay, but let's see what happens now. Okay, the Amik Bracha, again, is a student of the Griz. Remember, Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik. Okay, who is the Griz? The brother of Moshe, the son of Rechayim, and the uncle of? Oh, very good. Okay, David Lipschitz, he knows the Soloveitchik family tree. Way to go. Okay. Oh, where's Mary Tolchin? Okay. All right, here we go. So let's see what the Amik Bracha says. Okay, it also is very nice, safe for Brisk Columbus. Umarenu Rabbeinu Hagon Abbezdin de Brisk. Okay, so who's he quoting? No, this, the Amik Bracha is the student of the Griz. Right, so he's quoting the Griz. Shemati, right, after Reb Chaim was known as the Rav of Brisk, the Griz was the Rav of Brisk. Okay, Shema Hadin Ishtan and Simchat Purim Mikol Sharas Machot Shema Adim. The Lono Metzino B'Shem Simcha Din Kazeshit Chayv L'Vasume Adelo Yada. This is quite a powerful contrast. There is Simcha in all the Chagim, the Simcha in Purim. But what does Purim have? A wild Simcha. Drink till you're inebriated. Right? We never said that that would be a goal on Sukkot or Pesach or Shavuot. So why does it play out differently? Why does Simcha play out that way? Here we go. Mishum Tebekol HaMoadot Iker Mitzvah Simcha Enu L'Smoch B'Hashem U'Baser V'Yayin Enu L'Siba. Lorera Simcha. What's the claim? When I'm drinking wine on Sukkot, what am I trying to do? The wine is just a means. It is not a goal in and of itself. Why do I drink wine? I drink wine because wine makes people glad. It inspires Simcha. I eat meat because it makes you happier. So it's wine and meat as a means. Okay, here comes my disastrous typo. I apologize profusely. Avo b'purim kivin dechtev. Mishta v'simcha. Nimtza. So I'm pretty sure that I somehow wrote Sheh Simcha, but the real word should be? Sheh Mishta. I apologize greatly. Okay, Sheh Mishta Atzma, hi gufa mitzvah. It's the only thing that makes sense. I must have made a typo. Unless there's a typo in the original Sefer. B'li shum tachlitam shel simcha. What's demanded in Megillah Esther? It's supposed to be a day of? Mishta. I mean, Mishta becomes a value in its own right. And if Mishta is about its own right, not just as a means of Simcha, then the halacha is going to play out differently. Everyone got the idea? Okay, now you could go even further. Why might this be true, though, guys? I think you can work out a very nice thing. Why might it be true that in Purim we made the mitzvah, Chazal made the mitzvah of Mishta per se? Yeah?
They switched it.
No, but forget the sequence. No. But what about the Purim story might have inspired this? Yeah, Andrew Arkin?
Sort of just
I'm sorry?
Yeah,
isn't it true that the whole Purim story is about one Mishta after another? How many parties are there in the Purim story?
Four.
Well, there's initial two parties that Achshverosh makes, and then Esther makes two parties. So you might say, oh, since it's a story that is full of Mishta, therefore the way the halacha plays out is that what you're chayav to do is not just Simcha, but Mishta. So everyone got it? So just to sum up, so according to the Amik Brach, we have a nice chiddush that in regular chagim, there's no mitzvah of Mishta per se. There's a mitzvah of Suda, perhaps, and there's a mitzvah of Basar V'Yayin as a means of getting to Simcha Rechab. On Purim, however, how does it play out? Mishta becomes a goal in and of itself. So according to Amik Bracha, that is why there is Adelo Yada only on Purim. When you're drinking wine just to get to Simcha, so it stops at some point. You have a cup of wine, you're already in Simcha place. But on Purim, where the mitzvah is the Mishta per se, so the criteria are different. Okay, we're going to come back to this idea in 1 second. Jacob Rockler.
Didn't you learn it, though, from the amount of fasting that goes on as well?
The amount of fasting.
Meaning they fasted for 3 days, and then they fasted before they went to war, and then...
Okay. So you're saying that's why we made it Mishnah.
Right.
Okay, good. Jacob Rockler, you can put that in your Sefer. Put it in the third volume. I don't know what it's going to be, the Lushal of Anah, whatever it's going to be. The Chutzal of Anah.
Or Purim, again, Kupurim, and we don't eat on...
Yom Kippur, so we
made. Jacob, you're obsessed with Purim Kippurim. It's a nice idea, and it's not the essential idea of the chag. What? Okay, can I give you a good rule for life?
Yes.
The mere fact Rav Lichtenstein quotes it does not mean you should be obsessed with it.
Okay.
I
said, what is changed at all?
That's true. But you only made like three comments, so what's two out of three? I admit, it's not such a large sample size, I admit it. But yeah, David's right. Okay.
So I think the feeling that the Emek Brecha makes as far as Simcha, you know, Purim versus other Chagim, and talks about the Mishnah being its own value as opposed to other Chagim where it's more like a means, that feeling would work just as well, even if you didn't bring in the concept of Adol yet.
Okay.
So why does the Emek Brecha have to bring in specifically Adol yet, which seems to be somewhat of a machlokas? When you could just say that the chiluk is that we have that the suda itself, whether you're going to be intoxicated or not.
Okay, so I would tell you something, David Zwick. Excellent. I would tell you a very, very interesting argument that's not for us right now. But there's a fellow who teaches at Gush named Eliakim Krumbein, very quiet fellow. He's a kind of quiet, unassuming fellow, people don't know. But he wrote once an extremely impressive article about the history of Brisker Lumdus. John said that was for you. Okay, where he asks the following question. Right, when you have these conceptual distinctions and understanding, what motivates them? Anyway, are you saying it to try to answer a question or a problem? Or you just say, no, once I have a concept, what should I do once I have a concept? I should come up with various ways to understand the concept. Am I problem solving? Who cares? So he traces through all these achronim, like what gets the conceptual ball rolling. Is it that there's a kasha on the Gemara you have to solve, there's a difficulty in the Rambam you have to solve, and therefore you say some conceptual structure? Or no, once you have an idea called shlichut, forget any questions. Let's talk about two different conceptual ways to understand shlichut. So in some ways it's your point, right, David? So because you're telling me the Emek Brecha should have said, oh, I've got this great distinction. This is Purim, this is the chag. Okay, but maybe sometimes it's stronger to say no, and I'm going to use that to answer a question. There's a difficulty lurking here, and that's going to justify the conceptual distinction. Okay? Yeah?
Doesn't it seem like a little inappropriate to just like take a day off in the middle of a velus of like imbibe and like drinking and like right in the middle of a...
Look, Michael raised that question before. I assume that even in our practice where the Avel suspends a velus or Purim, right, it's presumably a less... wild Purim than usual. I assume it's much more subdued.
If he's saying that the ikar of the mitzvah of Purim is like that you don't know, then I would say like if you're not fulfilling that mitzvah.
Look, I'd imagine even as you guys will discover, you probably don't know already, not everybody thinks you really have to get inebriated in Purim. And I imagine even those people who normally think you do would agree that the Avel would go with a different position on Purim. I think so. Because don't get the different opinions about what Avel that really means, right? And whether, okay, yeah.
Well, if you say that Purim doesn't really suspend, and it's just like, it's still a day, but like we're still like, somehow we don't like keep the, like it, that it counts as one of the days of Velos,
mm-hmm.
then if you could have the concept of Osik,
okay, it's interesting how that plays in, but I'm going to go there for now. Okay, let's see how many time I got to run, I'm sorry. 15. Okay, another more obscure Akum, a very nice safer. Okay, the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim used to be a man named Rabbi Tzal Zsolti. Okay, Zolty. He has a very nice Lumder Sefer called the Mishnah Yavitz. Okay, Betzal Zolty. And he has a good Chiddush here, source 15. Okay, I typed this in. Hopefully this one's without a typo. Okay, because that Emek Brecha typo is like the most disastrous typo I've ever done in my typo career. I have a long and illustrious history of typos, but that's the worst one ever. Okay, source 15. Vene l'chora, tzarech iyun, delama shina katavit, demei karaktiv simcha mishtev yomtov, karaktiv simcha lefnei mishtev, v'acharkein tidyumei mishtev simcha mishtev lefnei simcha. So yes, the other question, not why is Yom Tov dropped, but why does the sequence shift? Maybe there's significance to the sequence. It's initially Simcha Mishtav Yom Tov, and it's Mishtav Simcha. Here we go. Great Chiddush coming up. Demei Kara Shebik Shalav Shemei Purim Li Yom Tov She'aser B'mlacha Imkein Mashish Chovat Simcha Purim Hu Mitorat Yom Tov. Now, that is a great word. Maybe the two distinctions are connected to each other. What was Purim going to be originally? A full-fledged Yom Tov day. When it's a full-fledged Yom Tov day, where does Simcha come from? Well, every Yom Tov day has Simcha. So Simcha precedes Mishta. What happened? Avo b'shat Kabbalah shalo kibla Yom Tov. So according to the Rabbi Zsolti, it's deeper. It's not just there's no Isser Malacha. What are they saying? There's no status of a full day. There's no day permeated with status. Okay? Ela Mishta v'Simcha. Imkein ikra din Simcha yishit papurim. Who lo chovar ayom shel Purim shiyom simcha shedim b'mishta shel Purim That is a fascinating chiddush which could affect our experience of Purim. What does Rav Zolti want to claim? It's not that there's a simcha permeating the day. That would be true if we made it like a deraita day, like a chag, like a yom tov. What is it in fact? It's a more concentrated simcha. Where does the simcha emerge from? Not from the day, but from the mishteh. So therefore, the sequence shifts. When it was yom tov, it was the whole day had simcha. Simcha precedes mishteh. Once they didn't make it a yom tov, they said, oh, where should you experience the ultimate of your Purim simcha? Via the context of a mishteh. It's not a yom shel simcha, it is a day that has a mishteh shel simcha. Now, if Rav Zolti is right, first of all, I think it's a nice chiddush, it solves all our problems. Why is it you could get married on Purim according to Rav Zolti? Yeah, what if I get married at 11 in the morning and do the mishteh at 3 in the afternoon? What will emerge? There's no problem with Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha, because Simcha is not permeating the whole day. Simcha is concentrated in the mishteh. So that solves the problem. That's why even if I say Ein Marvin Simcha B'Simcha, I can get married on Purim. Okay, why does Purim not cancel Avelut? Well, maybe Yom Tov only cancels Avelut because you have the full-fledged clash of a day full of Simcha hitting a day full of Avelut. But if I have not a day full of Simcha, just a more narrow Mishnah Shel Simcha, maybe there's a sense that that doesn't have the same kind of clash with the world of Avelut. So I think a lot, if you combine the Emek Bracha and Rav Zolti, I think you get a very interesting take on Purim, which might solve all our problems. Right? Again, Emek Bracha says they didn't make it a din of Simcha, they made it a din of, sorry, there's a din of Mishnah separate from Simcha. And we pointed out that some good pshat then. We had Jacob Rockland's clever pshat having to do with the Taniyot. And we had what Andrew Arkin suggested. That there's so many mishtas in the story. Maybe that's why they formulated it in the context of mishtah. But if you go one step further and go to Rav Zolti and say maybe it's not a Yom Shel Simcha in general. Maybe the Rabbanan don't create a full day status. They only concentrate it within a mishtah Shel Simcha. That can explain why you can get married. It can also explain why Avelot is not canceled. Yeah, David Lipschitz.
So using that logic, that it kind of suspends the veil, it's just for the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be allowed to, as an avel, go to a suda on Shabbos? That's like a bigger company because you're doing a mitzvah of suda Shabbat.
Look, I'm out of time. I don't discuss like other avel questions at this point. If that's okay. Okay, anybody else? Okay, so again, I think there's food for thought here in terms of our Purim, which we're going to experience in 2 weeks. But maybe, just to give you like one possible ramification, like obviously Purim is a more joyous day, and people could let loose, but realize that maybe the intensity of letting loose really should take place in the context of the Suda, not beforehand. For example, if someone's thinking of getting drunk, they might say, oh, the time to do that is only in the Mishnah context, the Mishnah Shel Simcha, not other points in the day. That might be a good ramification of this Rav Zolti idea. All right, last two comments. Yeah, Josh.
Just playing on what I said before about the difference between Chag and Purim and Shabbat is that if the point of Shiva is to get you back into your community and to, well, the Shiva's not sad, but it's the time is sad. So if the Shiva is even more positive because people are coming and getting into your community, the Shalosh Regali would really fulfill that because by definition, by going to the base of Mikdash, being part of the community, going out, by extension being part of being in relationship with God, that would seemingly fulfill it. Whereas on Shabbat or on Purim, you're not going to the base of Mikdash. You're always staying by yourself.
All right, we'll talk about it later. Okay, guys, we're going to stop Minchah in 1 second. Just, I'm on for Shabbos, looking forward to it. Just if two people could come over, or three people could volunteer to give the very Torah at the meals. Okay? So come over to me after Minchah if you want to give the Torah. Ashrei Yoshvei Ve'Precha.